the OTB Podcast Network.
And I'm delighted to welcome Andy Mitten of United We Stand and Gareth Roberts of the Anfield Wrap to the show. Good morning, lads.
Morning.
Gareth, we might just start with you. You were obviously watching your team play last night. Were you encouraged by what you heard coming from the likes of Jurgen Klopp and James Milner, at least?
Encouraged, not particularly. Surprised, not either. Jurgen Klopp's come out before and said he does not like the idea of a Super League and that he does support the idea of the Champions League. Equally, from everything I've heard, you know, the players, the manager, staff at Liverpool Football Club found out the same way the rest of us did, via the news, via social media. You know, there was no preempting of this from Liverpool's owners to the staff, which in itself, for me, is a problem. It is a poor way to treat the people that work for you. To use business language, which they seem very fond of, where is the stakeholder management? Fans are stakeholders in the club. People who work for it are stakeholders in the club, as are the manager, as are the players, and none of them are being told about this. And this is a surprise to everyone, it seems, bar people who were in Boston, who were absentee anyway, who clearly don't get the values of Liverpool Football Club.
It is the sense that Jurgen Klopp can make the right noises, but the influence he'll have is actually just going to be limited. Is that where maybe your worries lie?
Yeah, I mean, well, you say his influence is limited. I think he is well-loved among Liverpool fans for obvious reasons. He won us a European Cup. He won us the league after all of these years. And he is someone who gets Liverpool Football Club's values. We feel very aligned to him. Every time the man speaks, he talks a lot of sense. He's talked a lot of sense about the city, about the people, about the politics and everything else. And then the owners, much less so. So if Klopp felt it was in his power to, you know, if he felt it was necessary, to walk away as a consequence of all what is going on, I think you'd see people on the streets, you'd see protests, you'd see people at the ground, you know, all of the things that we've seen under the last regime of owners, which seems a long, long time ago, and which I thought we were now beyond, but perhaps not. So Klopp has a lot of power there. Milner too. It was good to just see him blatantly come out and say, well, it's not for me, I don't want it, I hope it doesn't happen. I think more players and managers across the league should use that power, should say they don't want it, should say that this isn't for them and that it isn't about the fans, and it should be about the fans. And we've already seen a little bit of that with Leeds players last night. So it's in their power. They get a microphone put in front of the face, as me and Andy are now, and you've got to come out and say what you think about it and be honest. And I thought Jurgen Klopp was honest, and I thought James Milner was too.
And do you think there is a chance that Klopp walks over this?
I mean, we shall see. He said a couple of cryptic things, which I think you can sort of interpret either way, really. I don't think he wants to, because he feels allied to what he's created there, to his staff, to his coaches, to the players, to us as fans, as I said before. So it would be an extreme thing to do. But I wouldn't completely rule it out either. I mean, it's basically a change of contract, isn't it? I mean, in any other sort of working environment, if you came in one day and then the next day it was totally different what you were being asked to do and what your job was, you would feel concerned about the future, and I imagine he feels concerned too. So we'll have with the rest of it, really, we'll have to see how it all unfolds.
Andy Mitten, a very good morning to you as well. What was your initial reaction when you started to realise that this was becoming a very real thing over the course of Sunday evening?
It was Sunday afternoon. I was about to write about Manchester United trying to beat Burnley for the first time in years at Old Trafford when it started to break through. And my first reaction was a negative one. And I tweeted out that nothing in football is permanent. You know, Leeds United, Manchester City have both been in the third division within the last 10, 20 years. You have clubs who've won the European Cup, such as Red Star Belgrade, such as FC Porto. I couldn't understand why no teams from the EU's two biggest economies and countries, France and Germany, had allegedly signed up to the proposed league. It just didn't stack up to me. And fortunes can swing wildly. And one point I made was, and this was just my very first reaction, I remember in 88, Manchester United having to pay AC Milan to come to Old Trafford to play a friendly game because Milan were the top dogs. Manchester United, you know, average crowds, 38,000, were far from the top dogs. Hadn't won the league since 1967 in England. And I think one of the great attractions about sport is that teams can rise so high and sink so low. I mean, it's sad for Sunderland fans at the moment that they're in the third division, but it also adds to the story around football. It makes it so compelling when teams rise up and go down. And then Manchester United and Liverpool, part of the reason they're the most two popular clubs, certainly in the UK, probably in Ireland, is because their history is tinged with triumph and tragedy. You know, Manchester United were relegated in 1974 because they deserved to be relegated. And I think if you start protecting that, it's a very dangerous game to play. And I think you've seen the reaction to the proposed Super League, not just from Manchester United fans. I mean, I did a survey yesterday on my personal Twitter, and I think 20-odd thousand people voted, and 87% of people were strongly against it. But also from fans of other clubs, I'm seeing exactly the same sentiments coming out from Liverpool supporters. Interestingly, when I look on the continent, it is slightly different. I see Barca and Madrid fans in Spain not liking the idea, but certainly not up in arms as they are in England. The fundamental for me is that it's born out of one thing, which is money and greed. And as Gareth touched on, by people who I don't think have got the best interests of football. They're only interested in the bottom line. I didn't like it when the Glazers took over Manchester United in 2005. I don't think that takeover should ever have been allowed to happen, that highly leveraged takeover. And yet it's still happening. Burnley were taken over under very similar circumstances this year, but because it's Burnley, it didn't get the coverage of Manchester United. I know Liverpool fans have had major issues with their owners, the owners before the current ones. I know that on the field, Liverpool have been very successful under the current owners. But as a model, I just don't like it. I just don't like the some of the Americanisms, which I think can be imprinted on European football clubs, which are rooted in their communities in a way that sports franchises, and I hate that word, are not in the US. I remember being in America 20 years ago and reading a brilliant piece of journalism about how the Cleveland Browns had been moved from Cleveland. One of the best books I ever read was about how the Brooklyn Dodgers had been moved from Brooklyn. And I just thinking, you know, imagine moving Manchester United from Manchester or Liverpool from Liverpool. It's just beyond offensive. You know, I get that both of these clubs have got huge global support, and I'm proud of that huge global support. And that goes through thick and thin. I remember being in Helsinki Airport 2013 on my way home from watching Man United playing in a pre-season in the Far East and seeing someone in a Liverpool tracksuit. And I think he worked for the club and he was on his way back from Melbourne. And he told me that Liverpool had just played a friendly in front of 90,000 people. Liverpool finished seventh that season, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that is an incredible number of people. You can't accuse them people of being glory hunters because Liverpool hadn't won the league for a while. And I'm not saying that facetiously. You know, Liverpool have got an incredible history. And it just smacks of greed. The people behind it, that six of the 15 are from England, shows the worry which continental clubs have. Barcelona and Real Madrid and Atletico, they've got significant financial problems. They're looking for someone to save them financially. I sense that some clubs have been coerced into this because they feel that if they don't join it, they will be left out. They won't have a golden ticket. But look at the backlash, not just from the authorities. I don't have that much sympathy with the authorities or the rights holders because they're all part, they've got vested interests. My sympathy and is with the fans, and already the fans get a raw deal, and already the match-going fans get a raw deal. And the match-going fans have gone from being seen as being the loyal, the hardcore, to being a minority. And decisions are already made on their behalf because of the power of television, and television would have more power in this case, so that you get situations where clubs like United and Liverpool play away games at Crystal Palace, and the game finishes after the last train back to Manchester or Liverpool. They do not care about the fans who go to the games. They just go, whatever. But the fans who go to the games, they're in the 1%. They're in the absolute minority. Most Manchester United and Liverpool fans around the world, they don't really care either because they're not at the matches. It's not an issue for them. They're not bothered about atmosphere, ticket allocations. But for the match-going fans, these issues are really important. And the league wants to fill a stadium with fans. And I just see uproar among supporters.
Is it not those match-going fans, Andy, that are going to need to make their voice heard the loudest? Because it may be the global fan who isn't travelling to Anfield or to Old Trafford every single week pre-pandemic that may feel, you know what, I want to see how the Super League actually goes. It is up to the people based near the grounds to actually make this protest happen, to actually try and stop this from happening.
Yeah, that's where the protest will come. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw some cross-club protest, even between Manchester United and Liverpool fans. That would be a first, but I think they've got so much alignment here where the strength of feeling is very similar. It's laced with politics, as it always is. There was a huge schism developed after the Glazer takeover, where you had 4,000 hardcore Manchester United fans walk and form FC United, among them the most politically minded Manchester United fans. That caused huge divisions. And one problem for the fan bases of these clubs is that they're not united. There's so many divisions and cliques and suspicions. And I often say no one hates Man United fans more than Man United fans themselves. And it hasn't always been like that. And I know there are similar issues at City and at Liverpool. And it's that divide and rule which has helped people and the authorities get into this position. There has been some progress, I've got to say. Ticket prices for away games, £30. I could never have seen that come in. But in Europe, where a lot of this Super League will obviously be played out, you still get the rip-offs. Barca charged United and Liverpool fans €120 for the worst seat in Camp Nou, only last year and the year before. Sevilla, €100. They're so out of touch. And that's under UEFA's watch as well. So I'm not going to say poor UEFA being left out of this, because there's massive room for improvement under their governorship.
Gareth, I'm curious to know how you felt watching Liverpool last night, because there had been such a huge backlash from fans. You had quite a lot of people talking about how they'd gladly walk away from their own clubs, you know, if this was to go ahead. And I imagine a lot of that is just down to the emotion of the day and stuff like that, and the shock of the announcement. But I'm sure a lot of the suits at all these clubs are trying to bank on the fact that, as much as fans might be unhappy, once the whistle blows at the start of 90 minutes, they're probably not going to be able to help themselves from getting emotionally invested in a game. I'm curious to know, Liverpool played last night, one day after this was announced, huge uproar. How are you feeling, and other Liverpool fans as well, once that whistle went?
Me personally, I felt like I was sleepwalking through the 90 minutes. I had it on. You know, my job now dictates that I have to watch a Liverpool match and talk about it. But I wasn't thinking about it, I've got to be honest with you. You know, it felt secondary to everything else that was going on. You know, only a matter of days ago, you know, Newcastle beat West Ham, and that was massive for Liverpool, because it's a chink of light in terms of getting top four. Top four to then get a place in the Champions League. And when Newcastle score the goal that they get, I'm out of my seat. I'm celebrating it like it's almost like a Liverpool goal, because I'm engaged in the idea that we can save what has been a poor season for Liverpool by qualifying for the Champions League. But this talk, this proposal has swept all that away in one fell swoop. And for me, there was something missing from the game last night. I thought Liverpool, as in the players and the manager, did their best. But I felt a little bit lost with it, and I don't think I was alone in that, because, as Andy's said very well there, you know, we're engaged in our clubs, and we've supported them for a long time, and supported them by going to the match, buying stuff, you know, being part of it, creating a culture around the game. And this just feels like a huge two fingers. You know, the way it's been announced, no engagement with fans, no consultation with fans, just we are doing this and we are going to tell you how it's being done, and there's nothing you can do about it. There's an arrogance about that. And I also think as well that, you know, the idea that it's a Super League, the idea in any way that it's built upon sport and achievement, it's not, it's a line in, these are the clubs that generate the most revenue, so let's put them in a league together. That's what it's about. It's not about sport. I mean, you know, I know everyone's diving in on Spurs, because, you know, Spurs haven't won a European Cup, Arsenal haven't won a European Cup. And I did have to laugh at the joke I saw on Twitter last night about it's like someone turning up at the Crucible and putting 50p on the table and saying, well, you know what, I'll have a game. Spurs being in the Super League. But, you know, it is laughable. It is a laughable proposal. It feels back of the fag packet type stuff. There's so many questions around it that are going unanswered. Not least there with this, you know, I think we can all work out who the other three teams are that make up the 15 and what they're waiting for there. But, you know, how do you qualify for it? You know, what about the counter arguments, basically? And why has no one from... I mean, you've got Joe Glazer signing off a statement, so at least there's a name there, if you like. From Liverpool's perspective, there's absolute silence. There's nothing. You know, and instead you're throwing... It got me angry watching it last night, watching Jurgen Klopp. It really did. It riled me watching Jurgen Klopp being the man from Liverpool who's first to have to answer questions about this. Because it's nothing to do with Jurgen Klopp. He has not proposed the European Super League. He's not proposing this change. And in fact, he said he's quite happy with how things are. So, and yet he's got to field these questions. He's got to answer them. And at the same time, he's got to coach the team, motivate the team, give a team talk. And the players are human as well. They'll just be saying the same as us. Well, what's going on here? What's happening? Where's this come from? And instead, they should be concentrating on, let's try and beat Leeds and get top four. You know, and they didn't do that. And I'm not saying that was why they didn't do it. But equally, I'll go back to the they are human point. They will have been talking about that on the bus. They will have been looking at their phones. That you couldn't avoid it in the media. It was everywhere. It was the top story in England and Europe. And I imagine it's created ripples worldwide. So they're wondering what's going on, we're wondering what's going on, and the people who have proposed the idea are largely sitting on the hands and saying nothing. And I don't see how that is a way to manage what is going on, because people will run, the more that there isn't information, people will run away with what it could be and what it could turn out to be next. So Andy mentioned Americanization. That concerns me as well, because what is next? Did they start playing, if this goes ahead, did they start playing these games in the Far East? And it does that have to get up at 4 a.m. to watch it on the television, because it makes sense income-wise for them to do that. I mean, you know, I suspect Andy feels the same in this. Liverpool Football Club and Manchester United should be of those cities, should reflect the values of those cities and the people who've made those clubs great. And just because, you know, there is a worldwide audience now, fantastic. I'm proud of Liverpool's worldwide audience, as Andy said he was of Manchester United's. But equally, I talk to a lot of those fans who come through doing the Anfield Wrap. And they love coming to Liverpool. They love seeing the city. They love the values of the city. And they love speaking to the people of the city. It's not PlayStation for them. They support Liverpool and they like the city and the people as well. What these owners, this group of owners are doing, it seems to me, is just ringing a badge, just using a name and just using it to leverage as much money and as much power as they can possibly get. And that's grim. That's not sport. That's not what I'm in it for. I like the jeopardy. There should have been jeopardy last night. I like the jeopardy of that it can go wrong. I like that. I like that tension. That is sport. You know, so Liverpool conceded an 87th minute equaliser last night, and I should be fuming about that. And I should be going on to our post-match content and saying, well, what were Liverpool up to? They were 1-0 up. They had, you know. And instead, I'm going on it talking about this plan. Talking on about a crap website, a crap idea, and an idea that, you know, goes against the grain of everything that football's been about for 100 years or more in this country. So, yeah, I didn't enjoy the match, it's fair to say. And if this is the sign of things to come, yes, they will be banking on the fact that we won't walk away because of our loyalty. But some people will, you know. There's a tipping point for everyone. There's loads of people, Andy, you'll know people as well at Man United who have already been priced out, who already can't go, who already watch on the television. Some people even go to the ground and will have a drink with the people they used to go to the match with and then watch in pubs because they can't afford, because they're priced out, because it's not for them. I can only see this continuing with this. You create a Super League, you can charge more money. You can ask for more money from TV companies. TV companies then ask for more money from us. And if you get all the packages that are already available, it's already an absolute fortune on top of season tickets, cup competitions and everything else. And so it's just a race to find the richest fans. And what about the loyal fans? What about the fans that have gone for years, formed the identity of the club, create the colour in the background, the flags, the banners, the songs, the traditions? Do we just forget all that and we just turn it into a piece of theatre, just a pay-per-view, PlayStation-style event, the best v the best? I mean, Jürgen Klopp said it himself in those comments in 2019. Doesn't that get boring? Like, I like playing Real Madrid, don't get me wrong, but I like that it's scarce, and I like that you have to qualify for it, and I like that it's different when it happens. If it's every week, well, where's the fun in that?
John W. Henry probably doesn't like the fact that it's scarce, and that's what it all maybe boils down to, Gareth. Like, Andy, it's interesting that Alex Seferin came out yesterday and called Woodward a snake, for example. I think there may have been a lot of Manchester United fans saying, no shit, Alex. Like, I mean, and the idea that the Glazers have signed off on this and are part of one of the more insidious stories that we've seen in football, again, no surprise to Manchester United fans. So, does that worry you when it comes to trying to stop this thing? That the Glazers have been able to put their hands over their ears, Ed Woodward has put his hands over his ears over the last 15 years and ignored all protest. Why would that change now?
Yes, it does worry me because I saw what happened in 2005. I saw people singing Not For Sale, signing up to petitions, turning up, complaining, forming a new football club, of which my brother was one of the first players to sign for. A lot of my friends went to support FC United. That caused no end of ructions. And yet, the following season, every seat inside Old Trafford was full, was taken. That's what worries me, because football fans are incredibly loyal, but they're also incredibly fickle. And I've travelled around the world studying football fans, watching them. I've seen Barca fans pushing for the president to be removed, because I always thought that the Barca model was the right one, this fan ownership. The problem is, it involves human beings, and human beings make a mess of things a lot of the times. And I've seen the Barca fans having these huge protests against the president and motions being put forward and rival candidates jockeying for position. And then Barca, because the team had not been winning, it's all about results. And then Barca win 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in a row and it just melts away. And that really worries me. But a problem with this Super League is a lot of the people who were attracted to these super clubs, your Liverpools, Manchester United's, Madrid's, they were attracted because of success, because of glory, because of winning. If it's a league table, someone has to finish bottom of that. I see different strands of fandom and it concerns me. So at Old Trafford, even when times are pretty bad, your match-going fans will be pretty supportive. And David Moyes could vouch for that, Louis van Gaal, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And you look online and there's this fury that does not represent the reality. They got Barcelona's manager the sack last season because they weren't happy because they'd been knocked out by Liverpool the previous season. They'd only won the league the two previous seasons. And Valverde was very popular with the players. So if these super clubs are trying to court these new supporters, I think that's inherently risky as well, because as Gareth said, your long-standing supporters, they've helped build the identity of the club, the songs, which the sponsors try and buy into. And it's full of ironies here because you have credit card companies, coffee makers, car companies who use images of football fans holding flags and flares. If you actually try and get in the stadium with a flag or a flare, you're not allowed. And there's no one worse for this than at the big tournaments run by FIFA and UEFA. I was at the World Cup in 2014. I saw some brilliant flags from England fans, and they were all stripped away because MasterCard had paid a bit more money. So there's so many unedifying parts of football. But this, it seems like a step too far. It seems like there's a lot of unity among supporters in being against this. However, if I'm playing devil's advocate, they're probably waiting for the hot air to boil over, to move away. Mm. They probably knew there was going to be a negative reaction. And they probably know that if they put Liverpool against Barcelona or Man United against Real Madrid on, people will tune in, because people are hypocrites as well. And that's what worries me. And I've done this for 31 years. I've seen fans every single year come to me and say, it's not what it was, I've had enough, I'm giving my season ticket up. And they don't. Some do, Gareth made a good point about people who've been priced out. So when I used to get the bus from Urmston and Stretford to Old Trafford, it was full of local people who could support, afford to support their local football team. That's long gone. That had gone by 94, 95. And I'm not parochial. I don't think that football clubs should only be for their local community, because some of the very best Manchester United fans are from Dublin. They're from London. They're from around the world. I know people who've followed the team for years from Amsterdam and go to 10 games a season. Not really these people that the Super League are interested in. I was described yesterday by people of my ilk as a legacy supporter. They're not really that bothered about the match-going supporters. It's the broadcast revenues that they want. Even more money for players. I'm sorry, how much difference does it make if a player goes from 300,000 a week to 400,000? Get your house in order first. Have a financial fair play system that actually works. The problem is that the governing authorities are not as strong as some of the billionaires and oligarchies who own the biggest clubs. The clubs have got the power, and that's really concerning. And it's a complete turn. I remember interviewing Man United secretary Ken Merritt in 1991, and he basically said to me, UEFA barely respond to our correspondence. They look down on us. They don't want to know us. And this was at a time when English clubs were the pariahs. But now it has completely changed. And now UEFA are the ones who are worried, because they know that the super clubs have got all the power.
Gareth, it does seem that there is maybe more room for surprise on the Liverpool side of things when it comes to how John Henry has behaved. Maybe just because he hasn't been around as long as the Glazer family, and maybe the protests against Manchester United have just been way more vociferous, rightly so, for so much longer. That has to change now, right? Like, even if this European Super League is dead in the water in a week, do you think that Liverpool will see Manchester United levels of protest against their American owner over the next few months and when fans come back to stadiums?
I mean, it will obviously depend on how it unfolds and what is said. I imagine that eventually one of them will speak. You can't go through a process like this, surely, and never speak. But I do think that there are people who feel disappointed about this already in Liverpool, and it will grow from there, because we talked before about the previous ownership regime at Liverpool and what a mess that was. And, you know, fans were part of getting them out of Liverpool. There were protests at the match, before the match, after the match. There was lots and lots of stuff online which people worldwide engaged with. I remember even Hicks and Gillette trying to get finance to keep hold of Liverpool, and someone in New York spotting them trying to do it, going in and out of a finance house, essentially, and putting that on the internet, and then people going from there, bombarding that place and saying, do not do business with these people. This is what they're doing to our football club. So there is a power of the fans. There's no two ways about it. And especially if fans come together from rival clubs, I mean, that would be huge, because, you know, I think there's a little bit of a bet being taken on tribalism here as well, that, you know, they know that if fans come together, this will be very difficult for them to get through. But fans will always find a way. And look, I've done it in this interview. I've had a pop at Spurs. So, you know, we have got to find a way to stop doing that and maybe come together and find our common ground on all this. But I feel let down by them, I've got to be honest with you. I mean, I've done Anfield Rap podcast and defended them and said, you know, I don't think the bad owners, I don't think you put them in the same places as the Glazers, as some of the, you know, owners who've come into places and changed the kit, the badge, the name, you know, whatever you like. And they've made mistakes before and they've backtracked on them. But some of that was down to the power of the fans. Let's have it right. So, you know, when they tried to charge £77 for tickets at Anfield, a proportion of the crowd walked out, myself included. And that was something that I thought I would never, ever do, to walk away from a match that, you know, you feel a part of, engaged with, something that you can even influence, maybe, to walk out on the 77th minute. And the numbers that did that was massive. And a U-turn followed very quickly. That's why I'm surprised at their approach on this, because I think they will have known that they would get the reaction that they've got. And yet they've chosen to do it anyway. They've employed people to create bonds between the supporters and the club that have been broken by the previous regime. They've done a lot of work in the community as well to build up goodwill. And I think largely they were getting there. I mean, there were people who were always suspicious of them, who would criticise absolutely everything they do. Those people exist at every single football club and will never be happy, whoever the owner is. But, you know, I tried to be fair with it on the Anfield Wrap, and I think the rest of us have as well. And we said, well, look, you know, they've built us a new stand. They've won us the league. They got Jurgen Klopp. You know, they've got a lot of things right. They've done great work in the community, like I mentioned. They supported the food bank's idea, which was a fan's idea, which clubs didn't really need to get involved in. But they did get involved in, and it's quite political to do that. And that was good, though. We wanted them to do that. It felt like it was part of the, you know, they were being part of the city and part of our community. This is completely devoid from that approach. And it's very, very disappointing. And it's lit a match to a lot of things they've said in the past, I think. And they will be dealing with the flames one way or another for a while now. There'll be a lot of distrust in this ownership. But they've obviously known that risk and they're prepared to take that risk. And I think Andy's right in that they think maybe, you know, a lot of the bluster will die away. The wider media, you know, magnifying glass on all this will go elsewhere, and you will just end up with some angry fans. And what will they really do? And I think they think they can get their way. I think they think this is the right direction of travel. It feels a little bit different this time to some of the other stuff where very quickly it turned. I think they're going to try and dig in, try and get there. You know, you see when the other bodies who I've no love for either, the same as Andy, we've been shafted enough by them as well. But, you know, when they're sort of trying to counterclaim and saying, well, we'll do this, you know, they seem to already have the ducks in the row on that one, and they're saying, well, we've already spoke to lawyers and you can't do that. So they thought it out in terms of that, and they feel they can do it. But in general as well, I think, you know, hopefully all of this creates a conversation, as Andy said, about the treatment of football fans in general. Like, if our clubs get to a European Cup final, why is it so hard for actual fans of those clubs to get a ticket? You know, that's annoying. If the ground holds 70,000 or 80,000, Why are UEFA saying, well, there's 12,000 tickets or whatever it may be? Ridiculous allocations. The FA do the same. The prices are ridiculous. The scheduling of the game is ridiculous. You know, the amount of football being played is ridiculous. And we're burning out our players. And again, you know, if you want to talk about products, well, what about that? Because, you know, is that good? Isn't there already too much football, perhaps? You know, shouldn't we be thinking about, if we're thinking about quality of product and people getting engaged with it, well, you want to see the best players being able to play their best football, not flogging them so they're knackered. Because I think we've all watched knackered footballers this season in the schedule that they've had. And now we're looking to increase that. It just all seems a bit mad, and it is clearly based on money, greed and power, not sport, not fans and not football as we know it.
Guys, just finally, a question very quickly for both of you, I'd say, as well, to be honest. Would you still feel comfortable covering these matches if a Super League was to go ahead?
Go ahead, Andy.
You're asking me if I'm going to give up my job? It's a big question, you know?
I know.
You know, I was in Madrid last week. I went to cover it as a journalist. I'm not a fan of Real Madrid. I'm not a fan of Liverpool. Honestly, I'm not. And I went there as a journalist, covered it. Had great chats after the match with Tony Cruz, with Andrew Robertson. And that's how I earned my living that week. Would I give up? Would I stop? Well, I didn't walk away in 2005 when the Glazers took over at Manchester United. I know plenty of people who did, and even more who didn't, and plenty who've come back to Manchester United. So it's all riddled with politics. I wasn't a big fan of the Premier League idea when it was first mooted in 1992 either. I still carried on watching Manchester United. I don't know the answer. Don't know the answer to the question. I don't like the idea of a Super League. I feel like as a journalist, I should report what's going on in an informed manner. I feel like as a supporter, I do not like the idea. And yet I've just received an email now from UEFA asking me to approve my accreditation for the European Super League. For the European Championships next month, which I'm going to.
You nearly dropped a massive bombshell on us there, Andy.
Yeah, it's starting next week, and I can't wait. No, I think I don't know. I hope it does not happen. I think there are too many games. And at Gareth's point about burnout is absolutely right. And there's people within the clubs who are absolutely against this idea, but they can't come out and speak publicly like we're speaking now. because they're just normal people with normal jobs, and they can't go against the bosses and lose the jobs. I see an incredible number of hardworking people at Manchester United who've kept the show on the road and done a lot of good things, like Liverpool has, and many of the same things which Gareth talked about this season. And there's been no let up. I know people who've just been, and no one has any sympathy for people who work for football clubs because they think, oh, it'd be great. I'd love to work for a football club as well. But they don't like this idea either. I don't like the idea. The fans do not like the idea. Would I completely stop going to football if it happened? I don't think I would. I think I'd still go to football. I think I'd still work as a football journalist because that is my job.
Like, I think the Glazer comparison is perfect there. Like, I mean you didn't stop covering Manchester United when the Glazers came in. In fact, the work of journalism sometimes is as important when bad things are happening, and maybe from within as well, things might change. I'm not sure if you want to chime in on that as well, Gareth.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons the Anfield app is where it is, and why it was created and why it was supported from day one, was that it came off the back of Hicks and Gillette. That's where the idea was born. That's why the original members of our group know each other, because we were involved in protests, we were involved in Spirit of Shankly. I created a fanzine around that time as well, because I didn't think a lot of the stuff in the media reflected fans' views. I didn't think, you know, some of the media were doing their job, essentially, at the time. The same as Andy, really. I mean, you know, I'd love to, you know, throw some big dramatic thing out there and say, well, if this happens, I'm going to walk away from football. But equally, I'm tied in by bills. I'm tied in by my family. You know, I've got to pay the rent and all the rest of it. So, you know, it'd be very difficult for me to suddenly find work to the same, you know, to the same level of income just at the click of a finger. I'm not some fat cat who can, you know, make huge decisions like people in Boston currently are for Liverpool and how they're looked at. So, I think I'd have to stay with it. But equally, though, there is a pile on effect, I think, sometimes, which I've seen work with some of my mates where they just say, oh, well, that's the final straw for me now. I'm not going to go anymore. I invest too much money, too much time into all of this. And I think some of those legacy fans, as they were described, will walk away. And that would be a real shame because, you know, I always say one of my best mates has had a season ticket at Liverpool since he was 8 years old, and he's 45 now. And I always say to him, unfortunately, if you tomorrow decided that you did not want to go anymore and you gave up your ticket, no one would really care at Liverpool. No one would ring you up or write you a letter and say thank you for your support and why have you walked away. They just go, okay, then there's an opportunity to put a different bum on that seat. Mm. And that's a little bit sad. That's a little bit sad for me. I think the loyalty of fans shouldn't just be dismissed. Shouldn't be, you know, Oh, well, there's all these younger fans who like football like this, and this is what they want, and they play on the PlayStation, and they create their own Super Leagues on there, so we're going to do our own version of that. You know, all of that's a little bit sad, because football clubs only exist because of the communities that they rose from in the first place. So to dismiss those communities, there's something wrong in that. And I'd like to think, you know, fan media, the likes of myself, Andy and others, we'll keep on fighting the good fight. And so that's probably what I will do as well. You know, people might say that I'm a hypocrite for doing that or whatever, and that's absolutely fine. That's the internet, that's the world, that's the way things are. But it's just not realistic, is it? And maybe that's why they think it'll work, because the likes of me, we'll moan, we'll gripe, we might take part in protests, but they might just think they can ride it out and do it anyway.
Gareth, well said. And Andy Mitten as well, thank you very much for joining us this morning. That was brilliant stuff. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Andy Mitten and Gareth Roberts there of United We Stand and the Anfield Wrap.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.